Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello, and thanks for joining us for this episode of Into the Killing. Do you know an interesting cold case you want us to cover? If so, please visit our website, criminallylisted.com, then go to the Suggest a Case page. We also want to know about interesting true crime stories for our YouTube channel, Criminally Listed, and stories about the supernatural for our other channel, Paranormally Listed. You can suggest cases for the YouTube channels on the same page. For today's episode, we're going back to October 1992. On October 4th, 1992, the Mozambican Civil War ended after 15 years and 4 months. Mozambique is in Southeast Africa. It's on the coast of the Indian Ocean. It's believed that people first came to the area in the 4th century BC. In 1505, it was colonized by the Portuguese, who ruled for the next 4 centuries. In 1975, the country gained its independence. Just 2 years later, the country descended into civil war. The two major factions at war were the Mozambique Liberation Front, which was the Marxist ruling party, and the Mozambican National Resistance, an anti-communist faction. Over 1 million people were killed in the fighting and the famines. On October 4, 1992, leaders of the two factions signed a peace treaty in Rome, Italy. 2 years later, they had general elections, which the Mozambique Liberation Front won. Sao Paulo, House of Detention, which is informally known as Cajuru Penitentiary, was a notorious prison in Sao Paulo, Brazil. It was constructed in 1920. In 1992, it was the largest prison in Latin America. It was built to house 4,000 people. But in the 1980s and 1990s, there were at least a double that amount of people incarcerated there. Conditions in the prison were deplorable. Pavilion 9 of the prison was 36,000 square feet. 2,076 inmates were living there, with only 15 guards. It was home to some of the most dangerous inmates. On October 2, 1992, there was a fight during a soccer game in the pavilion, which led to a full-on riot between two gangs. The inmates attacked each other with pipes and shanks. They also burned mattresses. After 3 hours, the government sent in 341 military police, who violently quelled the riot. 111 inmates were left dead. It's believed that the police killed 102 inmates, and the other 9 inmates were killed during the riot by the other inmates. The incident shocked the country and it made headlines around the world. Many human rights groups condemned the Brazilian government for the conditions in the prison and the violent repression. In 2002, the penitentiary was demolished. In April 2013, 21 years after the massacre, 23 police officers were sentenced to 156 years for their roles in the massacre. Months later, in August, 25 officers were sentenced to 624 years. Then in April 2014, 15 officers were sentenced to 48 years. However, this was largely symbolic because none of the officers have had to serve their sentences. On October 3, 1992, Sinead O'Connor was the musical guest on Saturday Night Live. The Irish singer rose to fame in 1990 with her soulful rendition of Prince's Nothing Compares to You. In 1992, she appeared on the show to promote her new album, Am I Not Your Girl? On October 3rd, actor Tim Robbins was hosting the show. During the first musical performance, O'Connor sang the album's lead single, Success Has Made a Failure of Our Home. For her second performance, she was going to cover the folk song, Scarlet Ribbons, which is on her album. But the day before, she got permission to do an a cappella version of Bob Marley's War. In the performance, O'Connor changed some of the lyrics to make the song more about child abuse. At the end, O'Connor sang the word evil and held up a photo of Pope John Paul II. She then tore the photo up and said, "Fight the real enemy." SNL creator and producer Lauren Michael ordered the applause sign to be turned off. So O'Connor stood silently and blew out some candles next to her. There was an immediate uproar. NBC received over 4,400 calls about the performance. O'Connor was banned from performing on Saturday Night Live. The performance did incredible damage to her career and reputation. O'Connor later said that the performance was a protest against the Catholic Church's physical and sexual abuse of children. O'Connor claimed that she was abused by members of the church when she was young. Her protest performance was years before the mainstream public's awareness of the Catholic Church's systematic abuse of children and the church's cover-up. In 2001, Pope John Paul II acknowledged the abuse and apologized for it. However, O'Connor's career never recovered. When Saturday Night Live airs reruns of the episode, they do not show the controversial performance. Instead, they show footage of the dress rehearsal. Sinead O'Connor died on July 26, 2023, at age 56. At the time of this recording, the cause of death has not been made public. On October 13, 1992, the number one song on the Billboard charts was the R&B classic End of the Road by Boyz II Men. The number one movie in the USA was the Steven Seagal action film Under Siege. In October 1992, Corey Lee Winneke lived in West Liberty, Iowa. The small town is in the southeastern part of the state. In 1992, close to 3,000 people lived in West Liberty. It was a quiet town where people didn't lock their doors. Corey was born on March 25, 1970 and grew up in West Liberty. He was Susie and Jim Winneke's only son. In high school, he played football. While in high school, he started dating a cheerleader named Jody Hotz. He graduated in 1988 and started working at his family's bar, Wing's Tap, which had been a staple of the town since it opened in 1972. In 1992, 22-year-old Corey was still working at the bar. Corey's family was well known in the town. Corey was described as outgoing and well-liked. He was happy-go-lucky and usually had a new joke to tell his customers. No one thought he had any enemies. Corey was still with his high school sweetheart, Jody Hotz. They were engaged and living together in a rural farmhouse. On the night of October 12, 1992, Corey worked at the bar. The next morning, when Jody left for work at around 8:15 a.m., Corey was sleeping in the bed. Jody was a teller at a bank in nearby Iowa City. Jody returned home around 6 p.m. and found some odd things. The dog was loose outside and the screen door was open. Also, Corey was supposed to be at work, but his car was parked in the driveway. She walked into the bedroom, which was splattered with blood. Face down on the floor was 22-year-old Corey Winneke. She called 911. An autopsy revealed that Corey had died from blunt force trauma. The murder weapon wasn't at the crime scene, but the medical examiner said it was a cylindrical object, possibly a baseball bat or a pipe. He had been struck 13 times. A blow to the back of the head broke his skull, and this was the strike that killed him. Corey was a large young man who had played football, yet it didn't appear that he put up any fight. The police surmised that the killer attacked Corey while he was sleeping in bed. As they beat him, he fell to the floor, where they continued to strike him. The police ruled out robbery as a motive for the murder. Nothing had been stolen. Plus, if he had been sleeping when he was attacked, he wasn't killed because he interrupted a burglar. Also, the murder was brutal and rageful. The police immediately suspected that the murder was personal. The killer came specifically to the house to kill him. Since the murder was personal, they theorized that the killer was local. This made the citizens of the small town nervous because the killer could be a friend, a neighbor, or even a family member. Unfortunately, not much physical evidence was found inside the house. But that night, a TV reporter came to the crime scene. He explained that his vehicle broke down about a mile down the road, so he walked to the crime scene. On the side of the road, about an eighth of a mile from the crime scene, he saw an aluminum baseball bat. There was blood on the bat. There was also a price tag. It appeared that it had been purchased from a local box store. The police believed it had been tossed from a vehicle as the killer drove away. DNA testing wasn't prevalent then, but they did test the blood type. It was Corey's blood type. The police checked the bat for fingerprints, but found none. It turned out that the reporter was not the only person to see the bat. A farmer had been driving on the road that day. He was driving on it at 9:30 a.m. and didn't see the bat. But it was there when he drove back at 1:30. The police believe that means that Corey was killed sometime between 9:30 a.m. and 1:30 p.m. For Corey's funeral, the church was packed. People had to sit in the basement and listen on a monitor, and more people stood outside in the foyer. Unfortunately, no arrests were made in the wake of the murder. Within 2 weeks, the police had interviewed over 120 people. They ruled out motives like Corey being killed over drugs or a gambling debt. Corey's one weakness was for women. Although he was engaged to his high school sweetheart, he had been involved with several women, including some who were in relationships and married. He had even fathered a child with a woman named Wendy Marshall. The police thought that Corey might have been killed by a jealous boyfriend or husband, or even a scorned lover. This made the first suspect, Jody Hotz, the last person to see him alive. Jody apparently knew that Corey was unfaithful, but she stayed committed to him. Jody also had an alibi for the time of the murder. He was killed sometime after 9:30 a.m. and Jody was at work then, so Jody was cleared as a suspect. Days after the murder, she moved out of the state to be closer to her parents. It turned out that she was pregnant with Corey's baby. She gave birth to a daughter. Unfortunately, Corey's parents, Susie and Jim, aren't involved in the child's life. They told Dateline that things got strained when Jody married one of Corey's best friends. The second suspect was Wendy Marshall, who Corey had gotten pregnant. She had left the bar with Corey that night. Wendy said that night after the bar, he had come to her house and they had sex. The police didn't think she was a likely suspect because she understood that what she had with Corey was just a fling. She did not think it would lead to anything more, so she wasn't jealous. Another suspect was Annette Hazen. Annette was a divorced mother of two. At the time, she was 29 years old, so she was about 7 years older than Corey. The police interviewed her, and she admitted that she was involved in a relationship with Corey. She also said that she and Corey had a future together. They were going to move to Branson, Missouri and run a bar. She said she had an alibi for the time of the murder. She was running errands with her sister-in-law in Iowa City. But she did say she was at Corey's house the morning of the murder at around 10:30 a.m. Her and her sister-in-law stopped there before going to Iowa City. She said she wanted to get a book that she had lent to Corey. She and her sister-in-law did not go inside. They knocked on the door and there was no answer, so they left. There were rumors that Annette was the police's strongest suspect. There were also rumors that she was the sheriff's niece and she'd be arrested after the election for sheriff. The sheriff told the local newspaper that Annette was a relative but wasn't his niece. He also said that she was no longer a suspect. They had talked to her sister-in-law and verified that she went shopping that day and she did not act unusual that day. Plus, they gave her a polygraph exam, and she passed. Annette wanted the case to be solved and often contacted the police with tips like men who were angry and possibly wanted to hurt Corey. But eventually, the case went cold. Corey's parents, Susie and Jim, told Dateline that they gave up hope that the case would ever be solved. For decades, suspicion hung over Corey's former fiancé, Jody. Many people thought she left the town over guilt. Jim and Susie told Dateline they didn't think that was the case. Instead, they think it was grief that caused her to move away. 25 years pass, and then there was a break in the case. 1992's biggest movies at the international box office were Disney's Aladdin, Batman Returns, and Home Alone 2, Lost in New York. Batman Returns featured Michael Keaton as Batman. For the next 25 years, four actors have taken on the role of Batman in live-action movies to varying degrees of success. In 2017, the three top movies were Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi, Beauty and the Beast, and The Fate of the Furious. All the biggest songs of 1992 were rap and R&B songs. They were End of the Road by Boyz II Men, Baby Got Back by Sir Mix-a-Lot, and Jump by Criss Cross. 2017's biggest songs were God's Plan by Drake, Perfect by Ed Sheeran, Meant to Be by Bebe Rexha featuring Florida Georgia Line. In 1992, the most watched TV shows were 60 Minutes, Roseanne, and Home Improvement. The most watched TV shows on cable in 2017 were The Big Bang Theory, NCIS, and NFL Sunday Night Football. 1992 saw the release of one of the most controversial video games of all time, Mortal Kombat. On October 1, 1992, the game was released as an arcade game. The fighting game was controversial because, at the end of a battle, the characters are allowed to kill their opponent, often in a gory fashion. By 2017, 10 Mortal Kombat games have been released in the main franchise, plus there was a live-action movie. In 1992, you could buy Pepsi Crystal and Clif Bars, and KFC sold popcorn chicken for the first time. In 2017, you could eat Oreo O's cereal, order the Naked Chicken Chalupa at Taco Bell, and drink a Lucky Charms shake from Burger King. In 1992, you could buy the Super Nintendo Entertainment System and the Talk Boy, and Windows 3.1 was released. In 2017, Nintendo re-released the Super NES in a Classic Edition, and you could also get Apple Watch Series 3 and Squishmallows. In 2017, a special agent with the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation was at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics Intensive Care Unit. He wanted to interview the victim of an attempted murder, but the doctors were working on them. So he was hanging out at the nurse's station. The charge nurse that day was Jessica Becker. Jessica grew up and still lived in West Liberty, about 18 miles from the hospital. She and the special agent chatted, and he mentioned that he was also a cold case investigator. Jessica then told the detective a strange story. In the autumn of 1992, she was 9 years old. At the time, Annette Hazen was living at her brother Denny's farmhouse. Jessica was friends with Denny's daughters, and they would have sleepovers at their house. One night, shortly after the murder, just before Halloween, Jessica was sleeping over at the home. That night, Jessica and one of Denny's daughters snuck out of the bedroom and went downstairs. They saw Annette, who was by herself. She was crying and lighting black candles. As she sobbed, she said she was sorry, Corey, and that she loved him. She cried that she never wanted to hurt him, and she was sorry that she had killed him. After hearing this from Jessica, the police decided to reopen the investigation. Jessica told the police that she had told her mother about the incident. The police talked to her mother, and she confirmed that Jessica told her that she saw Annette lighting candles and saying sorry to Corey. She didn't go to the police because she was afraid. She thought that Annette was the sheriff's niece and he might try to protect her. She was also afraid of her ex-husband, who had an affair with Annette. Her ex-husband had threatened her in the past. She was worried that out of loyalty to Annette, he might hurt her, Jessica, or her son. She also thought that if Annette really did kill Corey, the police would figure it out themselves. The police also talked to Annette's niece, who was with Jessica when Annette supposedly confessed to the murder. She claimed that she did not remember that night. In early 2018, the police tracked down Annette Hazen, who was then living in Tipton, Iowa, a town about 20 miles from West Liberty. She had remarried, and her last name was Cahill. She was the grandmother of four. Since 2009, she had worked as a proofreader and customer service assistant at the Police Law Institute, which provides online training courses for police departments in three states. Her daughter said that she was a typical grandmother who liked to bake and quilt. A detective went to interview her, and she was friendly and welcoming. He told her that he had news about the murder. She said she was happy that there was news. It was painful not knowing what happened after all these years. She thought she'd never find out who killed her former lover. He asked her to go to the police station to talk, and she agreed. At the police station, she said that she and Corey had a sexual relationship. They had sex several times a week in different places, like cars, the apartment above the bar, and even in the bar. She said that she was madly in love with him. She claimed that Corey had told her that he was done with his fiancée, Jody, and the town, and was ready to move away. She said that the week after he died, they were supposed to go to Branson, Missouri, to look at bars they could buy. But before the detective brought up the murder, Annette said she was busy and needed to go. The detective asked if she could meet tomorrow, and Annette said yes. But then, just before the meeting, she canceled. Days later, the detective went back to her house and asked her about the night of the murder. Annette said she had been drinking at the bar that night and she was very intoxicated. She felt like she couldn't drive herself home. So she went to her car to wait for Corey, who was going to drive her home. When he came to the car, he was with another woman, Wendy Marshall, the woman he had impregnated. Corey told her that he would drop her off and then he was going to go home with Wendy. Annette admitted she was angry. She wanted to know if Corey was serious about them. Annette told him that she feels like nothing to him. Annette said that's when he told her he loved her for the first time. He then dropped Wendy off at her car, and Annette said that they went to her home. They had what she described as angry sex. She then passed out, and Corey left. The detective then confronted her and told her that they believed she killed Corey. She denied committing the murder and said she had only ever wanted to find the killer. She then told the detective to get out of her house. The police talked to Wendy and she said that night Annette was furious. The district attorney decided that based on Jessica's story and her mother verifying it, there was enough evidence to arrest Annette. In May 2018, Annette Cahill was arrested for the murder of Corey Winnicke. She was charged with first degree and second degree murder. In March 2019, 56-year-old Annette Cahill went to trial. There was no physical evidence that Annette was involved in the murder. Neither her DNA nor her fingerprints were found at the crime scene or on the baseball bat. No blood had been found on her clothes or her shoes. Red fibers had been found on the bat, and the police couldn't connect the fibers to Annette. The star witness was Jessica Becker, who talked about the blacklight candle confession she heard 27 years earlier. Becker's mother also testified, and she said that Jessica told her about the confession, but didn't take her to the police because she was scared. The prosecution said that Annette was in love with Corey, but he had no intentions of leaving his fiancée to be with her. If he was going to leave his fiancée, it was to be with Wendy. The prosecution speculated that after Corey left, Annette drove by Wendy's home and saw his car there. Annette realized that she'd never be with Corey, so she decided to kill him. That morning, after Jody left for work, Annette went to his house and found him sleeping. She beat him to death with a baseball bat. The prosecution also thought that Annette's alibi was suspicious. She said she had been shopping with her sister-in-law in Iowa City. The prosecutor argued that Annette went shopping with her sister just to provide herself with an alibi. She had no other reason to go shopping with her. They also stopped by the house because if someone saw Annette there or some physical evidence placed her there, this visit would explain it. The trial lasted 5 days and then went to the jury. The jury deliberated for 8 hours, and they could not reach a unanimous decision on the charges of first-degree and second-degree murder. They were 9-3 to acquit, so a mistrial was declared. The district attorney decided to try Annette again. Annette Cahill went to trial again 4 months later in September 2019. The trial lasted 6 days and was very similar to the first trial. But this time, there was a new witness, Scott Payne, who had been a friend of Annette's brother. After the first trial, Scott's mother bumped into Corey's mother, Susie, at a funeral. She told Susie that she was surprised that no one had wanted to talk to her son because he possibly knew something about the murder. Investigators talked to him, and then he testified at the trial. He said that on the day of the murder, he had been at Annette's brother's house, where Annette was living. He was drinking and doing drugs. He saw her pull a paper bag out of the trunk of her car, and in the bag were some clothes that looked like they were stained with red paint. But he had formerly worked at a slaughterhouse, and he knew it was blood. The defense pointed out that Scott Payne was interviewed during the initial investigation, but didn't mention anything about the bloody clothes. Scott said it was because he was into drugs and alcohol at the time and didn't want to get involved in a police investigation. The defense also argued, if Scott had been doing drugs and alcohol, was his memory reliable? The defense also pointed out that there was another big problem with the case. Clutching Corey's hands were 4 strands of hair. The defense argued that the hairs could be tested for DNA, but weren't because it wouldn't benefit the prosecutor's case because it would cast doubt on Annette's guilt. Annette's sister-in-law testified. When Annette was arrested, the police interviewed her and asked her if she had fibbed a little to protect Annette. She admitted it was possible. But when she testified, she claimed Annette was with her that morning and she never lied to the police. After delivering for 2 days, the jury foreman told the judge they were deadlocked. The judge asked each juror if they were given more time, could they come up with a unanimous decision, and they said yes. So they were sent home for the day. They reconvened in the morning. They spent 16 hours deliberating. They found Annette Cahill guilty of second-degree murder. On November 22, 2019, Annette was given the maximum sentence for second-degree murder in Iowa, 50 years in prison. Annette's lawyer appealed the conviction. In March 2022, the Iowa Supreme Court upheld the conviction. In October 2023, Annette's lawyers petitioned for post-conviction relief. They were looking to get her sentence overturned because they said she did not receive a fair trial. The petition claims that the prosecution withheld evidence that cast doubt on the credibility of law enforcement witnesses. It also alleges that the jury members did independent research during the trial. They also said that other evidence from witnesses was suppressed. They also claim that the judge gave the jury improper instructions. Finally, it says that Annette did not receive effective counsel. The petition is asking for DNA testing to be done on the evidence. Her lawyers believe that this will reveal the identity of the killer. The petition will be heard in April 2024. At the time of this recording, 61-year-old Annette Cahill is serving her sentence at the Iowa Correctional Institution for Women in Mitchellville, Iowa. If her conviction isn't overturned, she could be released in 2042 when she'll be 79 years old. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Like we said in the beginning, if you have a case you want to suggest for Into the Killing, Criminally Listed, or Paranormally Listed, please visit our website, criminallylisted.com. Well, that's all for this week. Thank you again for listening. Please be safe and take care of yourself.